This is an ABC podcast.
I love Geraldton because it's Australia's best kept secret. Great weather, great beaches, great seafood, great lifestyle. Why would you be anywhere else?
Breakfast with Dominic Bayens on ABC Midwest and Wheatbelt.
Well, that's not quite right, is it? It's not. It's the Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti, and I'm really glad you can be here this afternoon. 12:05. Today and shortly, we'll look at some opportunities for grain growers to get involved in the growing biofuels market. And you're also going to meet a very special woman. 2 years ago, Dubbo-based shearer Carol Mudford became a registered nurse and started working in suicide prevention.
The first 3 weeks I was in that job, the shearing industry lost 3 shearers to suicide. One was a young fella I had worked with, and his family were my work family from the last few years. And so I found myself in a position where I was able to try to do something for my community.
Carol Mudford has done more than just try. Last night she was crowned National Rural Woman of the Year, and shortly you hear why she deserves that recognition. We'll take a look at that in some more detail for you just after the news headlines at 12:30 today. 12:06 here on the Country Hour. First up today, pressure is mounting on Sheep Producers Australia to refine and restructure its future flock strategy. The strategy was launched by Sheep Producers Australia in September, with CEO Bonnie Skinner saying the sheep meat representative body will lead the development of the national strategy for both the sheep meat and the wool sectors. But a few weeks ago, Wool Producers Australia CEO Joe Hall was on the Country Hour saying there'd been a complete lack of transparency around the development and funding of the future flock strategy, and the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry should consider putting it on hold until there's a better understanding and acceptance of the concept. Joe Hall said wool producers had no idea about the strategy before it was launched, and she wants answers.
We're still looking for a few more details around this, so it was a bit of an awkward position to be in.
Why were you excluded?
I'm not sure why we weren't included, but I guess that's where our concern comes from, is that there's been a complete lack of transparency with this process.
Now, the funding of this strategy was via a closed tender process, but drawn from the transition package designed to assist WA businesses in the phase-out of the live sheep trade by sea, as was revealed in Senate estimates last week. How appropriate was that process?
We've raised concerns with DAF, and that is one of the key points that we've raised, is that, you know, there was scarce money allocated to the Western Australian industry and producers in particular, and to have a national strategy developed out of those scarce resources doesn't seem to fit well. What we would envisage for that money is tangible outcomes to be delivered on the ground for Western Australians.
Joe Hall from Wool Producers speaking on the Country Hour earlier this month, 12:08. Well, Joe Hall isn't the only one who wants more detail. A draft letter from several state farming organisations is now circulating, calling for an urgent meeting with Sheep Producers Australia's board to consider options for developing a stronger, more inclusive strategy for the nation's sheep producers and the broader industry. Now, my understanding is that letter is waiting on several signatures and will be sent to Sheep Producers Australia board members shortly, perhaps even today. CEO of Sheep Producers Australia is Bonnie Skinner. Bonnie, are you aware of this letter?
I've been told that there is a letter that's been drafted as recent as a day ago, but I'm not across the detail of what to expect in the letter at this point, but I certainly welcome feedback from our members at any point, and I think it's very constructive for them to articulate that in a letter so that we can continue the conversations that we've been having with them for the last 6 weeks about the project.
Why was wool producers and some of these state farm organisations left out of developing a national strategy for sheep meat and wool?
They were never left out or excluded. In fact, working with wool producers, the state farming organisations and other sheep industry organisations are entirely central to the whole project. Sheep Producers Australia, in terms of our core business, initiatives like the Future Flock Project, really go to the heart of the core of our purpose. Our job's to lead strategic projects that shape the future of the national sheep industry, and this is what we're doing. As soon as we were successful with this project, we took it out to our membership and we took it to Wool Producers Australia to make sure that they were secured in the foundational parts of this project. So we have been, you know, very forthcoming with them going back 6 weeks now to say, we really want you involved in developing this project with us. Please develop it with us.
If we have a look at the criticism, it is that Sheep Producers Australia hijacked money in the transition package designed to assist the WA sheep industry transition out of the live sheep trade by sea. You excluded wool producers and state farm organisations from your plan to launch this future flock strategy, launch the strategy, and assume those groups would sort of fall into line and back your strategy. Was that the plan?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to make clear there. We were approached by the Australian government to apply for a closed grant process to complete two key bodies of work in terms of facilitating and coordinating the development of a national strategy and a WA strategy in light of the phase out of live sheep exports by sea. As you'd be familiar, one of the key outputs of the co-design process that was initiated to support the input of people who are affected by the phase out policy to have a say in how they wanted money spent. One of the clear priorities arising from that process was that they wanted to see a strategy developed. And so we've been approached to do the work. We certainly haven't excluded anyone in the development of that. As I said, we're at the start of the process. Collaboration is key to this. And in terms of doing strategic projects like this, it's core business for SPA and central to our purpose as an organisation. We were previously the custodians of the sheep industry strategic plan. And we certainly haven't done these projects at the exclusion of everyone. And they're the conversations we're having with our members currently and that we continue to have.
Do you acknowledge that that is the criticism coming from these groups, Joe Hall from Wool Producers and the state farm organisations? They do say you excluded them from this whole process of developing this future flock strategy. Do you acknowledge that?
I have to wait until I see.
But you've had those conversations. Well, regardless of the letter, you've heard that from Joe Hall, haven't you?
Of course, I welcome feedback from all of our members.
But do you acknowledge they feel that they have been ignored, they've been excluded? Do you acknowledge that that's how they feel, that they have been excluded?
Of course, these are two-way dialogues that we have with our members on any and every issue. That's the job for us. And so if that's how they feel, then of course we've been acknowledging those concerns in the discussions that we've been having for the last 6 weeks with our members.
How appropriate is it to receive a non-competitive closed grant of around $800,000 from the transition package to develop this national strategy rather than have it directly assist the WA sheep industry?
I don't think it's quite for me to comment on how DAF wants to allocate its funding and conduct its business. I am aware that limited tender arrangements are a fairly standard course of business for the department.
But is it appropriate that it's devoted to a national strategy rather than directly assisting the WA sheep industry?
I think what the project is looking to do is recognise the fact that, as was made very clear in all of the presentations that were made to government and the submissions provided to government and the opposition to the live export phase-out policy, which SPA still opposes that policy, is that WA is part of a broader national strategic industry. And so it is imperative to create a plan, because there is currently no plan for the industry, for the sheep industry in WA. There is no plan or roadmap to get that industry to the phase-out date and beyond. So it's really important that there's a strategic planning process that does account for what are the key priorities that need to be looked at as part of supporting the industry to be, in frank terms, try and get the best possible outcomes for people under the scenario.
Should that be run by Sheep Producers Australia, though?
Sheep Producers Australia is supporting the process in WA. The WA roadmap is being developed and led by the strategic steering group. One of the recommendations arising out of the independent report provided by the independent panel was that there needed to be a skills-based WA-led group to have input into how this industry was going to work its way towards 2028 and beyond. And that is ultimately you know, the basis for which this group's been established.
This is The Country on the ABC across Western Australia, 14 past 12. CEO of Sheep Producers Australia, Bonnie Skinner, is here today addressing a range of concerns raised by wool producers and now several state farming organisations about the process of developing this future flock strategy. These groups say there's been a complete lack of transparency around the development and the funding of the future flock strategy. Bonnie, just on the funding of the strategy, how does it look that Sheep Producers Australia Chair Bindi Murray is on the Transition Advocates Strategic Steering Group and suddenly Sheep Producers Australia gets $800,000 for this future flock strategy?
As I understand it, and I've not been involved in the appointment of members to the Strategic Steering Group, that sits with the Department of Agriculture. My understanding is that the members of that group were chosen for their strong links to the WA sheep industry and that there's an appropriate conflict management process in place.
But how does it look?
How does it look? The feedback that I have about Bindi's involvement in the WA sheep industry is extremely positive. The feedback that I have about her involvement is that she is a very strong advocate for her sector as a sheep producer who doesn't only produce sheep in Western Australia but also has supplied live sheep export markets. So she knows firsthand and is being impacted firsthand by the implementation of this policy. I hear positive things about her being on the SSG. I think we have welcomed the formation of that group. And importantly, I think that we haven't mentioned so far is that the development of that WA roadmap is linked directly to a $5 million implementation fund. So it's not just a strategy or something that sits on a PDF. It's something that actually can be linked to investment-ready priorities that can be funded out of that $5 million fund.
So that $5 million is directly for Western Australia. Is that correct? That $5 million dollars that's coming is going directly to Western Australia?
That is correct.
Now, there was also some concern raised by Jo Hall when we spoke to her a couple of weeks ago about the time frame delivering this strategy by Lamex next year. And Wool Producers says, considering what it's seen of the plan so far, that's very ambitious. And Jo Hall was hesitant to be involved in a strategy that's not going to deliver tangible outcomes or is sort of being delivered in line with an arbitrary date as opposed to a proper process. What do you say to that?
Yeah, Jo Hall and I, as I said, we've been discussing the nature of this project and it's not created yet. You know, in terms of the contract timeframes around that, it is to the end of the financial year. But I think for us, you know, we're certainly not starting with a blank sheet of paper. I think this strategy is really encompassing the fact that there is a lot of existing work out there that's analysed the sheep industry and the performance of the sheep industry, the performance of markets, on-farm profitability and the issues that we know exist. So I think it is about leveraging the existing bodies of work and having a really clear laser focus on, in 10 years' time, what does the industry want the sheep industry to be and look like? What are the things that are going to support the economic growth of the sector to be able to capitalise on international demand for sheep meat, which is continuing to grow year on year and for which, for sheep meat in particular, Australia has no real global competition in that area. And so therefore, how are we going to get there? What are the key things? And I think actually that we've got a lot of information to build a base on off that. Yes, it's an ambitious timeline, but this is not a process that is unfamiliar to the industry. And I think it's, you know, in terms of the response we've had so far, people are really wanting to get involved, to give their time, to give their input into the development of this strategy because they think it's a really exciting opportunity.
But they're still not on board. I spoke to Jo Hall from Wool Producers yesterday and she said she's still not on board because she doesn't have the details that she wants.
Well, we've provided Wool Producers Australia with a number of different details. As I said, we continue to have conversations with Wool Producers Australia and all of our members. It's been less than 6 weeks since the initiative was launched. And so, of course, we're going to continue to work with all of our state members and Wool Producers Australia to make sure that they've got input into this project.
And does that mean sharing the money that you've been able to secure? Are you going to be sharing that money that you've secured for the strategy, the $800,000 from the transition package? Because Jo Hall also raised concerns about that money that was awarded to your organisation, saying that's fine, but if Wool Producers is going to participate or other groups are going to participate, that money has to be shared or distributed to other groups. Are you open to that?
Well, I think if the entire sum was shared across Wool Producers and our eight members, I'm not sure what there would be to dedicate to the project. So I want to be really clear. We've been asked to deliver two pretty big bodies of work with that amount of money. And so The budget is linked to the development and the facilitation of that process.
But that goes directly to you.
Its own participation. SPA is funding its own participation in this process separately to the budget that's been received in terms of our strategic input into what this plan is going to look like. Now, that's separate. There's two things here. There's SPA running a project, and then there's SPA's strategic input into developing the outcomes of a strategic plan for the sheep industry. They're two distinct things.
Would you do things differently in hindsight?
I think, you know, had you had multiple years to lead into this process, but I think it's, I suppose some of the comments have surprised me to a certain extent in terms of Sheep Producers Australia's core business is to lead strategic initiatives for the industry. Of course, everybody in this industry and doing these jobs like this would love more time. Of course they would. The reality is that we were approached for a closed grant process. And I think importantly for me, given that this project has a WA component, the number one thing that we've heard from our WA members and WA stakeholders in the last 12 months or more has been, what is happening? What is the next steps? When is support going to start rolling out?
Do you think the criticism has been unfair?
I think people are free to give their opinion. And as I said, we welcome that in discussions and dialogue.
Yeah, but what is your opinion? Do you think the criticism is unfair?
That is my opinion. I think people are entitled to give their feedback to me, and that's what I expect about running a member-based organisation, is that we have those discussions with our members.
What's the next step here?
So there's multiple next steps in the process at the moment. We've had over 25 applicants to our national advisory panel. So we're in the process of selecting those people at the moment. We're recruiting for services, including the selection of an economist. And the conversations, as I said, that we're having with our members is seeking their feedback about how to shape the next steps in the consultation process. So there's going to be a number of those things that will be underway between now and obviously the end of the project.
Bonnie, it's been great to have you on the Country Hour. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Belinda.
CEO of Sheep Producers Australia, Bonnie Skinner, addressing concerns about the process and the funding and the development of the future flock strategy. I wonder if you share similar concerns that were raised a couple of weeks ago, in particular by Joe Hall from Wool Producers. Let me know on the text 0448 922 604. Rob in Busselton says Bonnie Skinner is not listening to anyone. She needs to listen. 12:22.
You're part of the Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
We'll get to the news headlines at 12:30 and then check the weather conditions around Western Australia when we cross to the Bureau of Meteorology. First, though, the next oil boom is going to be on the farm, not under it. That's according to the Grains Research and Development Corporation, which has released a roadmap looking at how Australian grain growers can lead the way in producing oil seeds for biofuel. GRDC Strategic and Business Development General Manager Ron Osmond says the roadmap will help guide the grains industry to be an even bigger player in the production of renewable fuel.
I guess the first thing to note is that Australian growers already participate in these markets globally through the export of significant volumes of canola. And that's been going on for some time and going to things like biodiesel over in the EU. And so that, of course, is something we expect to continue and potentially grow over time as more of the world's economy sort of converts over to these sorts of fuels. So the roadmap really then outlines multiple horizons and outlines, I think, how we see our feedstock production both supports biofuels now and where can we take it sort of in the immediate horizon, but also how it can scale, we think, over the next decade through technical innovation as we see demand scale as well.
So are you looking to use mainly canola for this roadmap, or is it all different types of oil seeds?
Well, I think canola is the low-hanging fruit, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, Australian growers have scaled that crop successfully over the last decade, or last, you know, couple of decades, really, from not very much at all in the 1990s to crops regularly over 5 million tonnes now. So that's been a real success story and where a lot of the demand has been driven through its use in biofuels as well. But we also want to look at, you know, what are the other options as well to increase production, and particularly as demand scales, what are the options as well for other oilseeds that can be cultivated in areas that are less suited to canola, you know, Junsia, for example, sunflower, soy. But then over the medium to longer term as well, how can we use technology to develop new crop options here in Australia that can support future feedstock requirements and help support things like supply resilience when you've got, you know, poor seasons in particular areas and issues like that that might crop up. And one example provided in the roadmap is using technology to explore the possibility of increasing the oil content of lipins, for example. I think we're lucky we have access to great researchers here in Australia that can help growers capture these sorts of opportunities. But as we point out in the roadmap, you know, some of those technology innovations take some time. And so we really need to start looking at those now to be ready, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the track as some of these markets expand.
How big of a player do you expect Australia will be in developing biofuel in the future?
I think, you know, we have a world-class farming system. We've already shown we can scale canola, but there's the demand for these sorts of fuels is huge. And I think Australian grains is really only will only be a piece of the puzzle, really. So I think, you know, other sorts of things that are in this equation as well are things like, you know, you use cooking oils and tallows, they've got limited supply. It's also looking at other agricultural crop components as well, you know, sugars, starches, you know, those sorts of sources as well. It's really going to be a combined effort to try and I guess meet the demand here to move from fuels that are blends into, you know, fully renewable fuels.
Would we be mainly supplying an international market, or is there much of an appetite in Australia for low carbon fuels?
I think there's challenges in Australia. So certainly the existing demand is export, and those have been supported by, I guess, support programs and regulation and the like, which we haven't got here. I think from a domestic demand, I think there's been some positive signals. For example, the Australian government's recent cleaner fuels program announcement, you know, for example, is a direct opportunity, and that's, I guess, supporting industry develop some of the processing and refining type capability that you'd need. So things like domestic crush, you know, refining and the like. So I think, you know, as that comes into play, that then enhances, I guess, the development of a local and a domestic industry in that case.
How far away are we, Ron, from biofuel becoming the norm, or at least more accessible, do you think?
Well, I guess biofuels, like I said, it's already happening. You know, with the grains industry exporting a significant amount of raw canola into biofuel supply chains, but also domestically, you know, things like wheat and sorghum and sugar used in bioethanol and biodiesel production, for example, and blended with traditional fuels to produce things like E10 petrol, for example. So that's already happening. But I guess in terms of moving towards that fully renewable, you know, those drop-in fuels as well, it might happen sooner than we think. I think as part of its cleaner fuels program announcement, the government was projecting the availability of domestically produced fully renewable fuel as early as 2029, so not far away at all, potentially.
GRDC General Manager of Strategy and Business Development, Dr. Ron Osmond, speaking to Amelia Searson. 27 past 12 here on the Country. I'll get the latest from the newsroom in just a moment. Firstly, we were catching up with the CEO of Sheep Producers Australia, Bonnie Skinner, just a few moments ago, and she was addressing some of the concerns that have been raised, in particular by Joe Hall, the CEO of Wool Producers Australia, concerned she wasn't included. Her organisation not included in the process of developing this future flock strategy, which has been funded $800,000 at this stage through the transition package. And on the text in response to that, Clark at Cranbrook says, Bindi Murray is an outstanding individual and works tirelessly and selflessly for the industry. Anyone criticising should put their hand up and do as much as Bindi has for the industry. Thank you, Clark. The text 0448 922 604. 28 past 12. Jonathan Beale is in the studio. He's got the news headlines for you.
Thanks, Belinda. A man has pleaded guilty to murdering a woman near Geraldton last year. Adrian Terence Ryan was charged with murdering his mother, Pauline Slater, in December. Ryan pleaded guilty today in the Stirling Gardens Magistrates Court in Perth. The 22-year-old is due to face the Supreme Court on March the 31st for a sentencing hearing. hearing. A 28-year-old man has indicated he'll plead guilty to murdering his father at a roadhouse in WA's south in October last year. A 51-year-old Dean Thomas Gallagher died at Salmon Gums Roadhouse, 100 kilometres north of Esperance. His son, John Matthew Gallagher, appeared in court today via video link from Eastern Goldfields Regional Prison to enter the indicated plea. He's due to have a sentencing hearing in the Supreme Court in January next year. And the Corrective Services Minister Paul Papalia says juveniles allegedly involved in a crime spree in Kununurra belong in detention. More than 20 children have been arrested in the East Kimberley town in the past week in relation to reports of car thefts, burglaries and dangerous driving. More news, Belinda, at 1 o'clock.
Jonathan, thank you so much for that update. It is 12:30 here on the Country Hour. Still to come, we'll head to Katanning for the results of the sheep market, and we'll also get some of the highlights from last night's, a big night in Canberra last night, the 2025 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award Night was held, and you'll meet the winner and also the runner-up from right here in Western Australia. First, to the Bureau of Meteorology, Rob Tarr is with you this afternoon. Rob, let's take a look around the Southwest Land Division.
Sure.
Bob, sorry.
That's all right. Pretty significant change in the air mass over the western and central parts of the Southwest Land Division. The trough that was down the west coast has moved inland, and we have a cold front just brushing the southwest corner of the state. So as a result, we're looking at much cooler conditions over southern and western parts of the Southwest Land Division today. We have seen some rainfall across mainly southern and western parts. The falls have been really dropping off as you go further inland, but still might get very small amounts in the gauge for the rest of today. And then that'll continue out through the Esperance region during this afternoon and evening. As we go into tomorrow, just some leftover onshore showers, a very weak front. It's basically falling apart as it reaches the southwest corner. So we could see another mill or two in the southwest corner from that feature on Thursday. And then a more substantial cold front reaches the southwest on Friday, and that'll bring showers, even the chance of a thunderstorm from about Bunbury across to Bremer Bay and across the southwest and into western parts of the south coast. Expect to see fairly widespread 5 mils plus, with some isolated amounts up to about 15 mils from that feature. Extending up through around Harvey, could see about 5 to 10 mils from that system, and then it will be dropping off as you go further to the north. So as you get up into inland parts of the Midwest and out through the Wheat Belt, most of that rain would come late, very late in the day and into Saturday, and probably not going to see much more than about 1 or 2 mils from that cold front. And then as in behind it, just some leftover showers on Saturday, just light falls from that, and then new high-pressure ridge develops across the area on Sunday and Monday. We'll bring a warming trend on Monday before the trough deepens down the west coast, moves inland again. Tuesday, temperatures are fairly uncertain along the west coast, but should be a very warm day through inland parts of the Southwest Land Division. And then that trough will be moving inland on later in the day on Tuesday into Wednesday. Could see thunderstorms develop out ahead of it through eastern parts of the state, but more interestingly, there is likely to be another front on Wednesday, and if there is going to be any significant rainfall through northern and inland parts of the Southwest Land Division, it's likely to be on that system for Wednesday and Thursday. It's still several days away, but it does look a little bit more substantial on the model guidance. So we'll be keeping an eye on that one as the cold front today, and again, the one on Friday, Saturday, won't be bringing much through the main ag areas, but potentially in about a week to 8 days' time, there could be a cold front that brings a little bit more rainfall through inland parts.
All right. Well, how are conditions then across northern and eastern parts then, Bob?
We do have a cloud band extending from the inland Gascoyne down through the Eucla, and there could be some light showers from that today into early tomorrow before that contracts away into South Australia. Over northern parts of the state, just some shower and thunderstorm activity over mainly northern and eastern parts in the Kimberley today, and that'll gradually be on the increase in the coming days. So seeing more activity on Thursday, and then by the time you get out to Friday and Saturday, it could extend through more of the region. So out to the Dampier Peninsula and out through southern parts of the region as well. could see some dry thunderstorms on Saturday over the inland part of the Pilbara, and that could continue into Sunday afternoon before the new ridge develops and clears those away. And also over the interior, we could see thunderstorms from the Kimberley, some of that moisture getting drawn down into the interior during the weekend before the new ridge develops early next week.
Thanks so much, Bob. 26-1 here on the Country Hour. Richard Hudson is in the studio now, and he's taking a look back at the rain that's fallen across the state in the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, not too much to get through. In the far north in the Kimberley, Gibb River had 4. That was the most. And then in the southwest land division, in the lower west, a fair few places had between 1 and 3. And then Perth actually topped it with 4. In the southwest, it was similar. A fair few places had between 1 and 4. And then Margaret River actually topped it with 5. And that's about it. But just a quick update on a fire that's been burning in the Shire of Derby, West Kimberley, in the last 4 days. It's been upgraded to a Watch and Act alert level by DFAS. So the fire is burning just east of Derby, which is just southwest of Broome. And the Watch and Act is for those travelling along Fairfield, Leopold Downs Road and Tunnel Creek Road, and people in Dimalurra, that's Tunnel Creek National Park, and Devonian Reef Conservation Park in the King Leopold Ranges in the Shire of Derby, West Kimberley. So that bushfire is currently moving in a westerly direction. At the moment, local pastoralists are fighting the fire. DFAS is monitoring it remotely. And if you're in that area or planning to go through that area, please search emergency in WA. That warning is at the top of the homepage. And just in the last 10 minutes, a few updated details on road closures and a new advice warning areas as well.
Thanks for that, Richard. 24-1. We'll head to Katanning just before the news at 1 and get the details of the yarding and the prices at today's sheep market. First, though, there is a change happening in shearing sheds across the nation, and it's being led by one New South Wales woman. Dubbo shearer, wool handler and registered nurse Carol Mudford founded Shedway in 2023, a national not-for-profit tackling suicide prevention and mental health in the shearing industry. And last night, she was named the 2025 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award national winner as recognition for her work.
Yeah, I've just walked off stage. I don't quite know what I feel right now. It's an incredible opportunity. There's a world full of incredible women out there doing so much good work for their communities. I feel like they all deserve this award, and I'm overwhelmed right now. It's amazing. Yeah.
I can see the emotion. I mean, this has been a journey, and it's a journey that started from a sad place. There were 3 suicides before this started. Take us back to the beginning.
Yeah, so right now, today is actually 28th of October, so it was the 31st of October 2023, so 2 years ago, that I went from shearing full-time into a mental health nursing job in a suicide prevention program. And the first 3 weeks I was in that job, the shearing industry lost 3 shearers to suicide, like you say. One was a young fella I had worked with, and his family were my work family from the last few years. And so I found myself in a position where I was able to try to do something for my community with a foot in both worlds of working in suicide prevention and being still connected to the shearing sheds. I still had calluses on my hands from shearing and just started talking to people about someone should do something. And we grew from there. And 2 years later, we are running multiple events every week across Australia, and that is in large part thanks to the incredible people in the shearing sheds across Australia and the world who have such big hearts and are doers. If you need something done, get a team of shearers onto it and it will be done. Yeah.
Well, to think from, one, the sad place this all began, and two, it was a simple Facebook page, to now where you are standing tonight. That's a lot to take in.
It is.
Yeah.
But what an achievement.
And phenomenal growth and engagement of a community around something that's really hard to talk about.
And growth over the last 6 months alone has been huge. And I think when you were speaking, you mentioned in a couple of weeks you'll go to Tasmania and then you will have been to every state.
That's right. Every state that has sheep. There's no sheep in the Northern Territory. But yeah, yes. And that also shows how far and wide the shearing industry spreads across Australia and is global as well. And the number of events that we do is the, you know, only a fraction of the number of events that are happening in the industry, which is so active and vibrant and professional and happening out there. And you mentioned the, particularly the growth in the last 6 months for us, and that has been in large part, and thank you to the experience of being part of AgriFutures Rural Women's Award, not just the award and the recognition and the media exposure like right now is wonderful, but also the importantly the connection with the alumni and the women being so active and supportive and doing what women do so well, which is looking out for each other and communities and making things happen.
One thing that struck me, you said the shearing industry and those in the shearing industry that you work with, they're big-hearted and strong people, but they're one of the toughest groups to engage. How do you get them to talk? You're doing it, but how are you doing it?
We're doing it from within. I walk into a shearing shed as a shearer, as a wool handler. But that's not to say that you have to be inside a community to help and support and have an impact either. But I do think that is the magic of Shed Bay, and our aim is growing our team. People from the shearing sheds that we train and support with mental health first aid and safe talk and other skills to then go back into the shearing sheds and run our workshops and be at every shearing event across Australia.
Well, Claire, I feel like it's safe to say shearers look after their shearing gear very well. Any shearer I've met certainly does. But are they starting to get better now at looking after themselves, do you think? Are you on the way?
We are definitely on the way. There has been such engagement, and I hear people talking more openly about mental health. I see people sharing things on social media. But most importantly, people are coming to talk to us at stalls and getting advice for themselves or others on where to go for help, and coming back with stories of that they've had a suicide intervention conversation with someone that they only realised needed to be a suicide intervention because of learning from a Shedway workshop, and they've then been able to connect that person to supports. And yeah, that's the importance of our work.
Newly crowned 2025 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award National Winner, Carol Mudford, speaking to Lara Webster. And she says the prize money from the award will help them run more mental health and suicide prevention workshops for those involved in the shearing industry right across the country. As always, if you heard anything in the interview that's raised some issues for you, Lifeline is always there for you. The number 13 11 14 if you need to speak to someone. 17 to 1. Well, the runner-up Rural Woman of the Year for 2025 is Isabella Thrupp, who runs a remote station in Western Australia's Kimberley region along with her husband. 4 years ago, she set up a business making jeans, especially for working women like herself.
Yeah, so I started as a ringer up north on a station, and throughout my journey of, working up north, I found out that, you know, we didn't have durable jeans to last especially for women on the land. There was a lot of menswear and nothing for the women. So I guess that prompted the idea to create something for us on the land and also contribute back to the community that I live and work in.
You said it's about representing women who live remote, work hard, and deserve to be seen. Dig into that a little deeper for me.
The award itself wasn't just about winning for Prinking and Pinjam, but it was about for all rural women, especially young ones coming through the industry. And yeah, it was that for them as well, and showing them if they have an idea big enough that it is possible and they can go out and achieve these goals and, yeah, make something for themselves.
Do you feel like these jeans that you began by making for yourself have done that for you?
Oh, definitely. Like I've, you know, I manage a station with my partner, and really the station management side is really his goal. And I really wanted, I guess, yeah, to give back to the community in my own way. And being able to create these jeans for women on the land is really, yeah, helping me as well to have my own kind of thing on the station as well. And, yeah, it's definitely helped me. And thanks to AgriFutures, it's, yeah, helped me further.
Big question, where to from here? Because, I mean, this all began in a kitchen with one pair of jeans. I think you said it's grown to more than 10,000 clients across the country. That's a huge growth already, but where to from here tonight, now that you've been named National Rural Women's Award runner-up?
So the main goal is to start looking at wholesaling into our remote community stores right across Australia, so we can get these jeans into the women's hands of who they were made for, and make it, yeah, more accessible for them.
WA's Isabella Thrupp speaking to Lara Webster. She is the 2025 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award National runner-up, and congratulations to her. 14 minutes to one. Well, the Rural Women's Award was originally established by ABC Rural back in 1994 with the aim of celebrating the women who drive change in rural Australia. AgriFutures has been supporting the awards for the last 25 years. If you're not familiar with AgriFutures, it's an Australian statutory corporation that was set up by the federal government to help fund research and development in Australian rural industries. And Chair Cathy McGowan is proud of the way the awards recognise rural women's innovation and resilience.
So what I really love, it's not actually just saying a woman's great. A woman's great because she's worked out a solution to a problem. And then we partner with others, but Westpac in particular, and help the woman do the work that needs to be done in her community or her state. So it's not just an award for being a good person. The money and the network and the expertise goes to solve real-world problems. And in the process, people get more skills, they get networked into the systems, and real change takes place in Australia. So back in my day, it was a farmer or a farmer's wife, God help us. But now women are absolutely everywhere. And on the board of AgriFutures, there's good women. We've got a woman member of parliament who does a fantastic, minister who does a fantastic job. So there's two things that I see. One is that women are stepping into their own space and doing really good work and are really respected for who they are. But they bring with them this integration of community and social and family to agriculture. Now, ag's always been a family business. But when we have women in decision-making, you have conversations about childcare, you have conversations about mental health. And I absolutely know that if it was only men in a room, we wouldn't be talking about that. And we do it now in a really inclusive way, looking after men and women's mental health, young people's mental health, and organisations like AgriFutures can actually come and do the research that we need to do to support programs that are going to help agriculture become more profitable because we've got better service delivery.
AgriFutures Chair Cathy McGowan speaking to Lara Webster at last night's National Rural Women's Award presentation. State and territory winners are awarded $15,000 scholarships to help them develop their projects and access business and leadership support. So congratulations to all of those winners. 12 minutes to one.
This is the Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
The state's first qualitative climate risk assessment focused on the aquaculture and seafood industries has forecast significant changes to the state's marine environments. The Aquaculture Council of WA commissioned the report, which was conducted by researchers from the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies at the University of Tasmania as part of the Sea Change Australia program. Speaking at the industry briefing, the Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development's fisheries scientist, Dr. Irani Chandrapavan, outlined some of the expected climate-related changes to the WA coast. These included changes to sea level, increasing sea surface temperatures, changing salinity levels, and more marine heat waves.
By 2050, 2060, we can expect around about more than 200 days up to, 350 days of the year being under a marine heatwave condition. So usually a marine heatwave, the technical definition is water temperatures are above that 10th percentile. And that projection itself is quite alarming and will drive a lot of kind of adaptations for the species in those different regions and also the impacts on the habitat as well.
Dr. Chandrapavan also says there'll be less cyclones, but those that do form will be more severe.
We are likely to see a decrease in the frequency of systems that develop off WA and across Australia, but the proportion of those systems that do develop is likely to be of the severe category, so category 3, 4, or 5. And there's high confidence around this, that projection information. There's less confidence around whether these systems are likely to travel further south because of the warming climate and also the timing, whether we're going to have a longer tropical cyclone season under a warmer climate.
Justin Belonge is the CEO of the Aquaculture Council of Western Australia. He says while it might all sound doom and gloom, the industry is still confident it can adapt to changing climate and marine environments.
Yeah, we see a lot of really significant potential for aquaculture in Western Australia, and I think we're really in a strong growth phase at the moment. But we also see some challenges on the horizon, and one of those is changing climates, and particularly in the marine environment, the impacts of those on our operations. So we've been working with some really excellent subject matters from across Australia, and we've been using the information that they've generated for us to provide both some training and some assessments for the industry for them to better understand what the likely changes are and how they can adapt to them.
And some of the changes, when you listen to them, it sounds fairly grim. We're talking about rising sea levels, weakening Lewin currents, increasing sea temperatures and changing pH, and also more of these extreme weather events, including marine heat waves. When you listen to all that, you think, well, that doesn't sound that great. But what's your reflection on that? How do you sit with that information?
Yeah, look, there's definitely some challenges. I think in our favour, we have some extremely sustainable and really well-managed operations in Western Australia. They tend to be in more remote areas away from other anthropogenic or human influences. So the confoundment of different externalities that sort of impact on any form of farming, I think, are a little bit more minimised in our circumstances. It gives me optimism that, we're well placed and the industry is well placed to be able to respond. And I think doing things proactively, like we've been doing recently with the Aquaculture for the Future training program, in terms of providing industry with the information that they need to be able to proactively prepare for future climate changes, that gives us our best chance of, continuing to, have resilient and sustainable businesses in WA.
And we're talking about industry preparing for a changing ocean and a changing climate, but are you already seeing or are you already getting feedback from aquaculture producers in WA that they are noticing a changing environment already?
Yeah, there's definitely some changes that we're seeing. Probably the most pronounced ones are in the freshwater crayfish sector with Marin in the southwest, where we've had significant reduction in rainfall and runoff, and so that's impacting on harvesting periods and capacity of refill dams. So that's quite an obvious one. We're also seeing changes to weather patterns and storm surges, which impacts on floating seaweed for abalone that's ranched in the oceans. And obviously there's other temperature impacts that we're seeing in other areas too. So we're certainly hearing from industry that there is a need to be able to both recognise and adapt to the changes that are in front of us.
So is that something that you now do, where you dig into what individual species can do? Say I'm growing abalone on the coast, this is what I need to be specifically thinking about and preparing for.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just finalising the Aquaculture for the Future training program, and that's specifically done what you've mentioned, which is to look individually at sectors and work out where their greatest risks are and what they can do proactively to change to that. And that might mean using different infrastructure. It might mean accessing different markets that are more lucrative. It may be some other sort of adaptation that specifically addresses some of those key risks. So we've just finished that program. We're really hopeful that with the support of the state government and the federal government, there'll be another program coming on next year. So we're looking forward to that. It's a really proactive way that industry can to look at sort of building resilience into their industries.
Justin Belonge, he's the CEO of the Aquaculture Council of Western Australia, and he was speaking to Joe Prendergast about the state's first qualitative climate risk assessment, which is focused specifically on the aquaculture and seafood industries. And this assessment is forecasting significant changes to the state's marine environments, things like sea level, increasing sea surface temperatures, changing salinity levels and more marine heat waves. But as we just heard from Justin, it looks like despite those changes that are going to be happening, the industry can accommodate for that and make its own changes to basically adapt to what's going on in the marine environment. 4 minutes to one, shortly heading to Katanning for the results of the sheep market.
Hello, I'm Andy Park. Join me for The World Today. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu launches powerful strikes in Gaza in the biggest threat to the ceasefire yet. The $4 million bomb website redesign stirs many, many complaints. High school students discover they've studied the wrong Roman emperor for their final exams. And, oh, Basil, remembering actress Prunella Scales' Sybil in Fawlty Towers, dead at the age of 93. Those stories and more. Join me for The World Today.
Let's get to the market now. And about 15,400 sheep sold at Katanning this morning. Tracy Kilner, even though the numbers were down a bit on last week, overall prices dropped a little today. Can you run through the details?
It was a mixed quality yarding. We had big lines of ewes and rams as well, mature rams. An increased yarding of heavyweight lambs sold to $270 a head, while feeder buyers were selective with increased competition on the well-presented lines. A good supply of mutton eased $10 across all weight categories. The new season lambs weighing under 16 kilos carcass weight sold from $80 to $178. The heavier lambs made from $150 to $190. Trade weight lambs sold from $182 up to $221, and heavy weights from $250 to $270 a head. The heavy crossbred hoggets made $178. Merino store weather hoggets ranged from $60 to $159. And the medium and heavyweight sold to $200. The merino ewe hoggets returned from $80 to $160 for lightweights. Medium and heavyweights made from $165 up to $200 with restocker interest. Store mutton eased with demand, selling from $90 to $175 for the large frame ewes carrying a fleece. Prime medium weight ewes returned from $150 to $210, and the heavyweight ewes over 30 kilos carcass weight sold from $195 to $226 a head. Mature store weathers made from $80 to $160. Medium and heavyweights returned $180 up to $220. The younger mature rams sold to $160, while older aged lines made from $40 up to $90 a head. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you so much for that, Tracy. The final numbers today, 15,396 sheep penned for sale at Katanning today. That's down 2,173 on last week. It's about a minute away from the news at 1 o'clock. Richard Hudson back in the studio with an update on that fire information for you.
Yeah, so if you're in the Shire of Derby or West Kimberley, or you're planning on travelling into that area, there's a bushfire burning and it's been going for about 4 days, and a short while ago it was upgraded to a watch and act level. That's by DFAS. So that fire's burning just east of Derby and just southwest of Kununurra, actually. I said Broome before, but it's just southwest of Kununurra. So that bushfire is moving in a westerly direction. Pastoralists are fighting it. DFAS is monitoring it remotely. If you want more details to plan your trip, just search emergency in WA, and that alert level is at the very top. And Tunnel Creek National Park and Devonian Reef Conservation Parks are closed because of that fire.
Richard, thank you for that update. Appreciate that. This on the text in response to the changes to the marine environment. Change of practices for accommodating climate change, as claimed by the fishing industry, is reactive, not proactive. 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.